This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
Angela Booker is an assistant professor in the Department of Communication. Collaborations with youth, community partners, educators, and scholars form the basis of her work. She is particularly concerned with addressing barriers that diminish access to public participation among underrepresented and disenfranchised communities. Tonight, she'll explore storytelling as means of promoting the well-being of youth and families in their communities.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much. I'm very excited to be here with you, and I'm going to try to jump right in to a conversation about storytelling. My name is Angela Booker. I'm an assistant professor in the Department of Communication by way of a Department of Education, so kind of stepping into a new role here. And I want to jump in with a little visual storytelling and ask the question, what's the work that stories do? So the first question is for you. Does anybody recognize this? Few people? Yeah? So this, 23 years ago, is a place that I heard a lot about. It's a garage where a couple of young people named by the names of Hewlett and Packard had $538, some ambition, a lot of effort, and they gave birth to this huge company, which becomes part of the origin story of a place called Silicon Valley. If you Google image Silicon Valley, you get a ton of these, and they basically tell us the story that this is the place of innovation and an engine of industry. Now, while I was in this area, I spent a lot of time in a place called East Palo Alto. I first started to go there to get my hair done. And a lot of my fellow students, the people I went to school with, thought I was crazy because they knew this story about East Palo Alto. This story says basically East Palo Alto should be known in relation to Palo Alto by the exit on the freeway. It doesn't have a skyline. It doesn't have an industry. And if you look at this feature that Google Images has added, you'll find out there's ghetto, gangs, street, crime. These are the ideas, the stories that get told about East Palo Alto in a quick Google search. I came to know it more deeply when I went to work in East Palo Alto at a place called Plugged In about 15 years ago. Right before I arrived at Plugged In, Bill Clinton happened to be coming to Silicon Valley to give talks and address this will of industry and politics, to address something called the digital divide. And perhaps people remember that phrase. The idea was that if you were in this engine of innovation, how could you have right next door a place that was under-resourced, suffering, struggling, being left behind, essentially experiencing this huge gap? And the idea was to have places like Plugged In, a community technology center, to combat this issue, to say, let's bring together our resources and let's help people become really strong in their use of media and technology. Let's get them connected to the web and that sort of thing. The challenge is you're trying to catch up all the time. You can become really good at Microsoft Word. You can learn to use these resources. But catching up with a company like Hewlett-Packard is really hard to do. And so the digital divide as a term kind of went away. And it didn't go away because the problem got solved. It went away because other stories got told, new ways to frame the idea came into being. So that's the place where I started to really think about the importance of community university partnerships and the stories that we tell. Because I was experiencing something completely different about East Palo Alto and what was possible there. And I wanted to, I think like Paul spoke of, honor the people in the equation. So I'm new to San Diego. And my family and I moved here actually because of the opportunities we had to do this kind of community-based research. This is an incredible engine. Had I stayed where I was before, I would have spent most of my time, I think, really trying to build these partnerships and build the research into that place. But here in the Department of Communication, Education Studies, Sixth College, the medical school, the work of community partnership and practicum work is really well on its way, and we get the chance to run with it. Now, I pull up something a little closer to home to give you a feel that there's a similar story that can be told here in San Diego. The place that I've come to work and do research and collaborate in is in Southeast San Diego. And it looks a lot in many ways like what we saw on the first East Palo Alto slide. There's another story that's being told if you search Diamond Neighborhood in San Diego. This is a different version of basically the same geographic area. But this is how I've come to know Southeast San Diego. This is a picture at the end of year party last spring at the Town and Country Learning Center, based in the Town and Country Village Apartments. We've got kids here, undergraduates from UC San Diego, former graduate students who are now faculty postdocs. And 8 years ago, Michael Cole and Beverly Anderson, who's in the middle there with a crown over her head, decided to partner and bring students and collaborate around what we could do together as a community and university partnership. Now, I'm new to San Diego enough that when I gave this talk as a practice round, I said town and country, town and country, town and country, and discovered that apparently there is a resort called Town and Country. That's not what we're doing the practicum and the research. We're over here at the Town and Country Apartments. Okay, so Paulo Freire, a Brazilian educator and philosopher, said, "A real humanist can be identified more by his trust in the people, which engages him in their struggle, than by a thousand actions in their favor without that trust." And this idea counters traditional notions of intervention. It's about how we align with each other and learn from each other and trust in each other. And I wanted to know more about how we can do that by understanding the work that stories do. So I want to bring us back there and tell you a little bit about how I came to know the Town and Country Learning Center, mostly through storytelling. Now, we have just launched the Democracy Lab at Town and Country in the last few months. So right now I'm talking about really the leading edge of the research that we're trying to accomplish. And the stories that I heard emerged from the traditional activities that people are engaged in at Town and Country. Healthy snack. Those are Brussels sprouts, probably from Professor Mike Cole's garden. The kids do love them. And this is an activity that the buddies and the kids engage in together. We call the undergraduates who come out to the course buddies. This is yoga. Actually, our volunteer yoga teacher is over in the back right here. And so these are activities that were already taking place at Town and Country. And one of the stories I heard a lot when I first started to go here was that a few years back, some other folks from UCSD came out and did health assessments at Town and Country. And what they discovered was that there were a lot of health concerns that were shared across the community, namely diabetes, challenges with high blood pressure and heart disease, that kind of thing. And so these individual sort of biomedical diagnoses became a community concern. And part of the connection with the Learning Center, which is situated inside of the apartment complex, is to address and think about health and well-being. So it's a big part of what happens at the center. But an interesting thing happened less than a year ago. This market idea emerged. So there was another tradition at Town and Country that engaged people in these community practices. And that tradition was to fundraise to support the young people at the Learning Center. So people would hold bake sales and fish fries and that kind of thing, and they still do, to support students to do things like attend the National Society of Black Engineers annual conference. Last year that was in Los Angeles. This year it's in Boston. So it's a big effort that the community puts in to make sure kids can go to it. But there was this convergence because there were these other activities, the gardening and the healthy snack and et cetera. And Mike and Ms. Beverly, the director of the center, got together and started to think maybe we could have a market, a sort of food stand, a fruit stand, where people can get fresh fruit and vegetables. And so here you see a bunch of undergrads hanging out outside the center. And this is non-trivial because we've spent the last 7 years mainly inside the center. So moving outside puts us in contact with more than just the people who choose to come to the center, but the residents as they're coming home and that sort of thing. And we get to start to interact with each other. Here are a few residents who are participating in the activities. And what happens when you start to sit together in a space and you wait for people to come home and they drive by is you start to hear other stories, stories you didn't hear inside the center. And these were stories that people started to tell us about what it takes to move from a place of community health to a community well-being. So health tends to be framed as this individual set of things that we need to address. You get a diagnosis, you get some sort of ideas about what you should do, maybe some prescriptions. Wellness takes into account this wider range of experiences. And when we sat at the market, we started to get access to the stories people were telling, and we were starting to get written into the stories that people were telling about well-being. An example of how this occurred was that people would come home and they would say, I save up money every week to come and make a donation and buy something to support the center. I don't have to do that. It's part of how I contribute and become a part of this community. One of the residents is a seamstress and a budding entrepreneur, and started bringing out some of the things that she was making. She would repair things for people. People would make requests. And it became a big community engagement kind of experience where recently she basically created a whole set of clothing for a fundraiser. And people in the community, kids, adults, were the runway models for the fundraiser. So these are the ways that people are engaging and supporting each other. But really, the task is very challenging because what we're talking about is going from knowing what you need to do and having information to changing your life. It's non-trivial. It's hard to do. Now, this all started with a lot of collaborative support, a lot of institutional and community partnership. Initially, the Center on Global Justice gave us a little bit to fund a graduate student over the summer and get some of the connections going between local gardens and et cetera. Then, to sustain this every week, we made a partnership here in La Jolla with Whole Foods, and they provide us with a donation box that we can bring down for the fundraisers. And we recently started partnering with the Center for Integrative Medicine here at UC San Diego in really trying to address how stories come to work on us as we make these transitions. From a health to a wellness model. So pulling back a little bit from the details of our practicum course, I want to return us to this question. When does storytelling become a tool for civic participation that people use to shape their circumstances? Because stories do a lot of work. Now, I come to this from a potentially either really confused place because I'm very interdisciplinary, or I'm on the verge of a breakthrough. Now, I come out of a program in learning sciences and technology design, which means I care a lot about tools and environments. I also take seriously a place of cultural studies, which makes the communication department here at San Diego a really important and exciting place to be, and I can address and ask questions about meaning and power. And I can ask, when are the tools and where are the environments where people start to do this negotiation of meaning and power? And finally, with political sociology, I can start to ask, under what circumstances do people begin to engage in public participation and organizing? And so what I'm looking at is a convergence of tools and cultural production. If we think of tools, we can think that they extend our capacity and they are things that we can appropriate to do what we need to do. We can think of cultural production as, say, an event like this. We're sort of producing our ideas about what UC San Diego is together through these talks, these conversations, and this audience. Stories fit right in the middle of that. They are a kind of tool that can be appropriated, that can be used to accomplish a lot. So Walter Benjamin, in his essay, The Storyteller, put it in a way that I think is just right on point and very beautiful. He said, "All this points to the nature of every real story. It contains openly or covertly something useful. The usefulness may, in one case, consist in a moral, in another, in some practical advice, in a third, in a proverb or maxim. In every case, the storyteller is a man who has counsel for his readers. By now, almost nothing that happens benefits storytelling. Almost everything benefits information. Actually, it is half the art of storytelling to keep a story free from explanation as one reproduces it. The most extraordinary things, marvelous things, are related with the greatest accuracy. But the psychological connection of the events is not forced on the reader. It is left up to him to interpret things the way he understands them, and thus the narrative achieves an amplitude that information lacks." So when making the leap from health to well-being, we need more than information. I'm over time, about a minute and 30 seconds, so I'm going to leave you here with this slide. This is a living bridge, and you could look at it and imagine that it's, you could imagine without the bridge, maybe it could be seen as a chasm. It could be seen as impassable. It could be seen simply as a river. But with the bridge, we have a new kind of story. So I started with this question, what is the work that stories do? And stories do a lot of work. They relate us to one another. They allow us to negotiate with each other about what we're doing. They can be circulated. They counter ideas that we hold, but they also normalize ideals that we hold. They announce who we are. They make visible or invisible the agendas and the experiences that we have. Stories affect the tellers and the listeners. And this is critical when we are doing community-based work. We have to be influenced by each other, and we have to trust each other. So under the right conditions, storytelling can construct bridges that give access to well-being, and we want to understand those conditions. Thanks very much for your time.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.